This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Legislative Republicans released a plan on Monday that would fund updates to American Family Field and keep the Brewers in Milwaukee through at least 2050. The plan would use $600 million in taxpayer funds over that time span for long-term renovations and improvements to the stadium where the Brewers play. About a third of that would be funded by Milwaukee City and County, though local leaders there have pushed back against paying that much. We're talking now about long-term plans aimed at updating American Family Field and keep the Brewers in the state, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Wisconsinites in general, or if you live in the Milwaukee area, do you think you benefit from having a Major League Baseball team in the state, in the community? Do you think it's okay that the state and local governments would pick up part of the tab for renovations to the stadium? Join in with your thoughts or your questions. It's kind of complicated. At 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tom Dakin is a business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we dig into the numbers, Tom, let's talk about the why. Why it seems like people generally agree that some kind of money needs to be spent on this stadium. What's the current situation before we get a package like this?
Well, the current situation is the stadium is not owned by the Brewers. It's owned by the public in the form of the Southeast Wisconsin Professional Baseball Park District that was created by the state legislature and Governor Thompson back in the mid-90s to help finance what was then called Miller Park. The stadium district leases the stadium to the Brewers. That lease runs at least through the end of 2030, and that lease obligates the stadium district to pay for major capital improvements, most major capital improvements. There are some that are considered discretionary. So, for example, when the Brewers opened that golf simulator, X-Golf America, last September, that was on their dime. The new Line and Kugel's Barrel Yard restaurant, Brewers paid for that. But most of the capital improvements that happen there are the responsibility of the public. So there is a fund set aside to pay for those improvements going forward. That was from that 0.1% sales tax that we used to have in southeastern Wisconsin. That tax ended in March 2020, and now the funds are running short. There don't appear to be enough to pay for improvements between now and the end of 2030. And what the response from the Republicans this week was to create a larger fund going forward and to have the Brewers extend their lease from the end of 2030 to the end of 2050. And now where we're at is the debate on that proposal that will go to the state legislature and to Governor Evers, and then ultimately to the Milwaukee County Board and the Milwaukee Common Council for their approval, since there is a local funding component.
Yeah, can you give us an outline now of that plan from Republicans? What's the money? Who's it coming from?
Sure. Well, it's a total of $700 million, $100 million of that coming from the Brewers. You've got $400 million coming from the state of Wisconsin and $200 million coming from Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee. And the state money is essentially going to be allocated on a yearly basis by virtue of state income tax revenue and sales tax revenue, the income tax revenue basically being generated by Brewer employees, including the players, as well as players for teams from other teams, the Brewers' opponents, when they play in Milwaukee. And essentially, the idea there is, from the perspective of the Republican authors of this legislature, is, look, we're taking money that's flowing in right now from this activity, and we're dedicating it to the stadium. Of course, if they weren't dedicated to the stadium, that money would flow to the state treasury in general, right? But nonetheless, that's sort of the approach they're taking. And the Republican legislators, this is led by Speaker Voss and his colleagues, argue that the city and the county should have to pay a portion of that funding, saying that they benefit by virtue of the city and county sales taxes. You might recall the city only got authorization to enact a sales tax in July through legislation that was passed by the Republican majority and signed by Governor Evers to help the city shore up its finances. But that's essentially where we're at.
And Tom, you wrote that the newness of that sales tax is raising is part of the question mark from city and county leaders saying, okay, you're asking us to pay for this. We're not sure how much that that sales tax is going to pay off. What are some of the concerns in addition to that, that we're hearing from local leaders about their price tag under this proposal?
Right. I mean, that's one of them. The other one is just, frankly, very straightforward. The state of Wisconsin fiscally is in good shape. I mean, we have a large surplus right now that, of course, that's a matter of discussion as to how it gets spent. Governor Evers would like to spend much of it. The Republicans would like to return it to the taxpayers in the form of reduced taxes. The city and the county don't have that. They're in better shape, thank goodness, because of the increased state revenue sharing and the county being able to raise its taxes, state being able to enact the sales tax. But they're not flush with cash either. So the arguments from Mayor Cavalier Johnson, County Executive David Crawley, is to say, look, we want the Brewers to stay, but our financial challenges should be taken into account when you're putting together a public financing package.
Talking to Tom Dakin, business reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about this proposal from Republican leaders in the state legislature on a funding package for the publicly owned stadium that houses the Milwaukee Brewers. You could join in with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about this. I have spoken with Governor Evers personally when he's come to Superior, and he's promised me and others, even in the media, and elected officials, that he would support funding Patterson Park. But when it came right down to it, he vetoed, line item vetoed, funding for the park. So he turned his face on us, and I would not support funding a stadium when our public parks and our tourism dollars are reliant on our public parks. We get a lot more tourists to our state parks than we do to a baseball stadium. So I would not support funding any stadium until we take care of our parks in northern Wisconsin.
Jeff, thanks for the call. And Jeff making a common argument, Tom, that there are other priorities they'd like to see the state turn their money toward instead of a stadium package like this. Is this something you're hearing out there?
Well, sure. That's you know, the biggest thing you always hear is, why should we spend money on the Brewers? Why should a taxpayer like the gentleman just called have to help support improvements at a stadium for a ball team that's owned by a multi-millionaire, Mark Attanasio? And the response, frankly, is because we have to. The lease requires us through the stadium district to pay for those capital improvements at least through the end of 2030. Here's the way I frame it. It's like you have this obligation that was set back in the mid-90s when the initial legislation was passed that created the stadium district that funded what was then Miller Park. The lease obviously contained this clause. I'll bet most MLB, Major League Baseball stadiums have similar clauses. They're publicly owned. The teams lease them. You have that obligation. It runs through 2030. Now, if you feel as a taxpayer that you don't want the Brewers to stay, that's definitely a position that one can take. And you can say, fine, we'll do what we have to do through the end of 2030. We don't want to be in breach of contract and get sued and lose that lawsuit. But then you have to acknowledge that, yeah, the Brewers are likely going to leave, or certainly the possibility gets greatly increased if there is no extension of that lease beyond 2030. And again, maybe people are fine with that. The one thing I would also point out is, let's hear your ideas as to what to do with an empty ballpark. And maybe it's you tear the thing down and sell the land for development, or maybe you let it sit there and use it for monster truck shows. I don't know. But you can't ignore that issue as well.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Jimmy joins us now in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Hi, gents. Listen, the Brewers beat the Cardinals to get their magic number down a little bit. So I'm a Brewer fan. I go to a few games, but I got a couple of questions. What are the Brewers paying per year for the lease? And what is American Family and formerly Miller, what were they paying for naming rights? I guess my point is, if the taxpayers, especially in Milwaukee County, are going to be footing most of the bill, maybe it should be going back to Milwaukee County Stadium.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. Tom, first of all, and we've had a few listeners wondering about this. Do we know how much the Brewers are paying to lease this publicly operated facility?
Yeah, the rent's nominal. It runs, I believe, this year, I think it's running like maybe $1 million to $2 million a year. Here's one way of looking at this. So that $100 million that the Brewers have pledged to provide as part of this, with the lease extending to the end of 2050, if you took the current terms of the lease, including the annual rent that they pay, plus the Brewers do make an annual contribution to that repairs fund. Most of it's coming from us, the taxpayers, but they do provide some money for that every year. Take what the Brewers pay annually. Let's extend it out to 2050. That would amount to about $40 million during that period. They're pledging to spend $100 million. So they would, in effect, be spending $60 million more than they're already obligated to spend. If that frames that question more clearly for your listeners. As far as the naming rights question goes, I don't know. That probably is proprietary information between the Brewers and, in this case, American Family. But I would just point out, American Family is not a party to the lease. They bought the naming rights. They have their name on it, but they're not a tenant. The Brewers are the tenant. And this is really a contract between a tenant, the Milwaukee Brewers, and a landlord, the Stadium District.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. We're talking to Tom Dakin, business reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking to us about the Republican plan released earlier this week to update American Family Field, provide funding, and aim to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee through at least 2050. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support some level of taxpayer support for long-term upkeep and renovations to American Family Field, maybe even beyond the current contract obligations? Is it worth it to put some money in to keep a Major League Baseball team in the state? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel business reporter Tom Dakin about a plan to update American Family Field, keep the Brewers in Milwaukee through 2050, with a combination of funding from the state, the Brewers organization, and city and county governments in Milwaukee. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the roughly 30-year plan to finance Brewers Stadium renovations? Do you think that the city, the county, the state benefit by having major league teams in them? Is it worth some public support? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls. James is with us in Milwaukee. James, hi.
Hi. I have to say this much. Perhaps Milwaukee does benefit from having a pro baseball team here. But I'm watching as Milwaukee County cuts back on its transit system and transportation services for the disabled. And if we, by that, I should say the county. If the county can't support those things, then certainly there ought not to be any spending on a ballpark. The priorities should be different.
James, thanks a lot for the call. Tom, a local objection there saying, hey, we can't afford some of the stuff we already need to keep up.
Yeah, and that's exactly the argument that the entire County Board of Supervisors made in May when it passed a resolution unanimously opposed to any county money being spent on stadium improvements. And the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors includes people who are conservative, people who are moderate, people who are liberal, a couple of people who are socialists. And they all agreed on that one point. So definitely they are simpatico with the argument of that caller.
Thanks for the call, James. Tom, I think some of the framing around this deal was, hey, we've got this new shared revenue system in Wisconsin. Things are going to look a little better for Milwaukee, the city, and Milwaukee, the county. Plus, there's that new sales tax option coming along. Are people hoping that those outweigh the costs that will come in if this deal goes through and the county and the city are on the hook for their part of renovations?
Well, that's certainly the argument that, again, Speaker Voss and his colleagues are making. They're saying, look, city, you've got a new sales tax. You're going to benefit from this by virtue of items sold at Miller Park, I'm showing my age. Items sold at American Family Field are subject to that sales tax, the city sales tax. Therefore, we're asking you to take some of that revenue and kick it into making improvements. I mean, the city's response from Mayor Cavalier Johnson and from a lot of the folks on the Common Council is to say, look, we haven't even implemented this tax yet. It doesn't start until next year. We don't know for sure how much it's going to generate. And just like what the previous caller alluded to, we, the city, we have other priorities. We'd like to hire police officers, firefighters, sanitation workers. We'd like to fix up our roads. We have some city parks that could use sprucing up. I mean, the list goes on, right? Those are all typical public services that a city delivers. So I certainly, again, understand the argument that the mayor and some members of the Common Council have been making.
Let's go back to our callers. Nancy is with us now in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hello. If I have understood what Tom Deacon has been so well explaining to us, it would seem that the city, Milwaukee City and County residents are going to be paying the majority of the repairs from here to eternity. And my feeling is that this is one of the best reasons, again, to make city employees and county employees, we demand that they return to live in the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee. That law was rescinded so that city employees whose pensions I am paying as a person who lives in Milwaukee myself, can live within reasonable distance. I'm feeling this is the best possible reason to turn that law back so that city and county employees at least have to live here. We're paying their pensions.
Nancy, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Nancy, Tom, take us back to a long-running debate, as Nancy mentioned, resolved by the state legislature overruling local ordinances requiring local and county employees to live in their community. Does that affect the math on this stadium deal? A lot of the employees who might be paid under these things, they'll be taking their money back out of the local community.
I don't know if that has anything more than a minor effect. Mm. And I appreciate Nancy's opinion. Frankly, that ship has sailed. That law was passed. I believe that was under Governor Scott Walker. I don't see that being rescinded anytime soon. Regardless of how we feel about it. And I'll just add, I really think the way to frame this issue, you know, the advocates of spending money on the stadium argue, in addition to, you know, the stadium district having to fill its obligation or that lease, they'll say, well, gee, you know, it generates X number of jobs and it does bring in a certain amount of, obviously, income tax, sales tax, revenue. You know, those are valid claims. I would say this: if the Brewers went away, they would definitely take the income tax revenue with them, would depart. Sales tax revenue, I mean, a lot of items that are sold in connection to a baseball team are essentially discretionary income. So presumably a lot of that income then gets sold to purchase other discretionary income and services. So I don't know that you lose a ton of sales tax revenue. You would lose some jobs, but again, you know, those are choices that elected officials have to make. Sorry, I'm being long-winded here, but I think the best thing for people to do is to sit down and say to themselves, okay, as a Wisconsin taxpayer, how much or how badly do I want to have an MLB team in Wisconsin, specifically in Milwaukee? And if I want to have that MLB team here, I have to be willing to pay for it. And that's just the reality. I certainly respect the position of people who say, no, it doesn't matter to me. Let them leave. I totally get that. I just think if you really want to have an MLB team, you got to acknowledge there are costs, public costs involved. And that's really just part of the equation.
And just our last minute or so, Tom, a sidebar to this story, Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson has said the Brewers should build commercial developments around the stadium to bring in more revenue for the city, saying, hey, basically, we've got a baseball stadium and a big parking lot. We can do more to develop. Just in a few moments, what are they hoping for?
Well, I mean, yeah, they would hope for that some of those parking lots to be developed commercially. Now, you'd have to remove the tax-exempt status on those parking lots that currently exist in order for that to generate property tax revenue for the city or the county. You'd also have some developers who'd have to be willing to step forward and invest their money to do it, and you'd have to have the Brewers' willingness to be a partner with those developers. And the Brewers' position on this essentially has been, sounds interesting, we're open to the possibility, but really right now, we as a business, we're focused on getting this financing package passed, and that's really where they're coming from. I will just add, on Monday, the American Family plan dropped. The next day on Tuesday, an MLB stadium proposal landed for the Tampa Bay Rays, and it does indeed involve a very large commercial development component with the stadium as the centerpiece of that in Florida.
Tom, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
You bet. I enjoyed it. Thanks for all the callers, too.
That's Tom Dakin, business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He talked to us about a plan to use $600 million in taxpayer funds, some from the state, some from local governments in Milwaukee City and County, over roughly 30 years to update American Family Field as part of an effort to keep the Milwaukee Brewers in Milwaukee through at least 2050. Still time for you to share your thoughts on that. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, Wisconsin has seen some big hospital mergers over the last year or so. Does that change the quality of the services that those hospitals provide? Check in on the state of hospitals here in the state and how they're rated when it comes to quality and the service they provide. If you have a thought on that, you can get the conversation started right now with an email at ideas@WPR.org. Then you can join the conversation with Kate and her guest. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin food share benefits and requirements have seen some changes since the start of the COVID pandemic that's left some people confused. The director of Wisconsin Medicaid is here with us to give us an update on how the program has changed in the last few years, months, I should say, who's eligible, what benefits they can expect, and how to get started. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you using food share now or have you in the past? How did it help you? What was the application experience like? And do you have questions about how it all works? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Jamie Kuhn is the director of Medicaid at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, where she oversees the food share program. Jamie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to clarify some terms here. Now, people might hear at the federal level about SNAP, the food assistance program, but here in Wisconsin, we're talking about food share. Same thing?
Exactly. Yep. Food share is what Wisconsin calls the federal program.
And we sometimes use the phrase food stamps colloquially. We don't technically have the stamps anymore, but is food share the program that replaced that in effect?
Yes. Yep. Exactly. We have Quest cards now, so there are no longer food stamps.
Okay, now things changed some over the COVID pandemic when it comes to a lot of public service or benefit programs. Congress loosened up some of the guidelines. What changed early in COVID and what has changed back with the end of the declared emergency?
Yeah, during the public health emergency, the federal government and the state government worked collaboratively to increase allotments for food share. So we had what we called emergency allotments, which allowed individuals to receive those who were not at their maximum, allowed them to receive additional food share dollars. And so since the public health emergency has ended, the emergency allotments have gone away. And so individuals have gone back to the amount and the eligibility levels that they were at previously. which really means that some families certainly got a bump during the public health emergency, and those additional funds did go away since the emergency allotments ended.
That was the allotments. Did eligibility change at all over the course of all that?
No, eligibility didn't change. So we are essentially back to routine operations now. So eligibility is still the same. It's just that individuals were able to receive more per month in certain circumstances. So individuals are still that are eligible for our program. It is still at the 200%. People are eligible for food share if their gross income is less than 200% of the federal poverty level. And so that continues moving forward. For people, that means to put it in dollar terms, for individuals that make less than $2,400 a month for a family of one, or $5,000 a month for a family of four.
And for someone who's hearing this and saying, hey, wait, I'm in that income level, I'm not currently receiving a food share, what is the process? What do they do to apply?
Yeah, so anyone can go online to access.gov and check their whether or not they are eligible for this and other programs that fall under Medicaid. You can also go into across the state. We have various what are called income maintenance offices, and you can work with folks there to see whether or not you're eligible and apply. And you can also call in, although as we all know, there is a lot going on with Medicaid redetermination. And so if you are able to go online, you can do a lot of this work online without having to call in to the centers. But you can also call in to our income maintenance centers and talk to an individual.
Do we know if we are using our food share to capacity? Is everyone who's eligible actually receiving it? Or is there a sense that there are a lot of people out there who could benefit from it, who would be eligible, but who, for whatever reason, haven't applied?
We have looked into this, and it does appear that there are groups of individuals who may be eligible that are not signed up for the program. So we do highly encourage individuals. What we're seeing anecdotally is that some individuals who are over the age of 54 that are eligible may not understand that they also can receive food share, and we encourage them to look into it and see if they're eligible. And I think we also are consistently seeing that children who are eligible are maybe not enrolled in the program.
Talking to Jamie Kuhn, Director of Medicaid at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, where she oversees the food share program. We're talking about food share, that's SNAP at the federal level, how it works in Wisconsin, who is eligible. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share using food share yourself, or maybe you've helped and advised people who do with maybe a hunger relief service in your neck of the woods, love to hear from you with your questions or your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jamie, a lot of political back and forth over work requirements for food assistance, in this case, food share. What is the current state of work requirements here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so the federal government did change or update that through recent legislation. And so starting October 1, individuals between the ages of 18 and, I believe, sorry, let me double check, 54 will be required to work. And so we work with individuals as they go through that process, to ensure that they have access to the supports that they need to adhere to those requirements.
And then there are various exemptions for people, even in that age range. At the younger end of it, I think if you're still in school, what other kind of things that might allow people to opt out of those requirements?
So veterans, for example, and obviously individuals who may have received, whether it be a healthcare professional or otherwise, documentation that they are not able to work.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Barbara is with us in Grand Marsh. Barbara, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Barbara? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'm just a little bit over what I would get a month in Social Security. I also have hospital bills. I'm 84 years old. I get $16 a month. There are nights when I just have popcorn. $16 a month doesn't cut it. If somebody comes in from another country, they are given more money than I get.
Barbara, thanks for the call. Now, can you talk a little bit, Jamie, about how much money people might get in different situations when they receive food share? It's not going to be the same for everybody.
Right. Your household size as well as your income really determines how much you may be able to be eligible for. There are maximum allotment amounts. And again, that is affected by whether or not the number of people in your household and your income limit. But thank you for that. Thank you for calling in. And I, you know, we too struggle with how to make sure that we are getting that we are making sure that people have access to as much as they possibly can. And if you do have any questions about your allotment, you can always work with our IM agencies to review that.
And I wanted to ask that as a follow-up for Barbara, Jamie, if somebody says, you know, I think I probably should be eligible for more, and they want to check and make sure they're not getting a lower amount of food share than they might be eligible for, or if they're rejected for eligibility, are there systems in place for them to challenge that, to request a reevaluation?
Yeah, absolutely. We have what are called hearing processes so that people can appeal the decisions of our program, and then they have a process by which they can go through to contest that.
Barbara, thanks again for sharing your experience. We're talking to Jamie Kuhn, Director of Medicaid at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, about updates to food share since the pandemic started, what's changed recently, and in general, what to know about the program, what you need to know if you're thinking of applying for it. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Are you struggling to pay for groceries? Do you use food share now, or have you in the past? Have you run into obstacles in trying to apply for food share? Join in with your questions, your experiences, maybe your advice for other people in the process at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Jamie Kuhn, Director of Medicaid at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. We're talking about food share here in Wisconsin. What's new? What eligible Wisconsinites should know? Still time for you to join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. If you use or have used food share at some point in your life, love to hear from you about the process, what it meant for you. Join in at 800-642-1234. Jamie, before we go back to our callers, can you talk a little bit about what people can and can't use their food share, their Quest cards to buy?
Yeah, certainly. So obviously it is really focused on food. The program is really geared around trying to reduce hunger and ensure that we are supporting healthy outcomes. So the focus really is on making sure that you are spending it on actual food, not pet supplies, not any live animals, whether it be pets, fish pets, or otherwise, vitamins, medicines, supplements, and then of course any alcohol is also not allowed.
And do you coordinate the food share program with hunger relief programs in different parts of the state?
Yeah, absolutely. We're so grateful for all of our partners in this space. We are always working with different entities, but we acknowledge all of the community-based organizations, whether it's food banks or food pantries around the states, that not only do they help raise awareness about the program, but they also are on the ground helping individuals with enrollment in food share and doing so much as they did during the pandemic and even more now to ensure that hungry families have access to food. So they're a huge part of making this program successful.
Let's go back to our callers. Suzanne is with us in Milwaukee. Suzanne, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm in Milwaukee County, and I know that there is a program that functions of senior dining. And once a day, in different locations, one can get a wonderful meal.
Suzanne, we don't have a very good connection, but I think I made it out. There's a senior dining program, Suzanne says, in Milwaukee that could help out people like Barbara, our previous caller. That actually fits right into what we were just talking about, Jamie, local providers. I mean, if somebody is applying for food share, is your agency able to help connect people with those things, or do they have to kind of go out and find them on their own?
No, I would say that the local organizations, as well as our income maintenance consortium and workers, certainly have work with partners and know where resources are. But obviously at the local level, you have a lot of 211 access. You can call there to find out where other services are provided and where community food sources are, as well as sort of your local United Way and other organizations on the ground. They all do a great job of connecting with one another.
Thanks a lot for that call and that suggestion at 800-642-1234. Lance joins us now in Ashland. Lance, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I brought up, I'm originally from Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, and I moved up here many years ago because I love it in Wisconsin. But I know a lot of people that actually get food stamps and they trade them out from cash, you know, and they trade them out 50 cents on the dollar. And I was just wondering if there's any way they could tighten that up or there'd be some more security that they could stop that, because it's especially with low income people, they take the food stamps and trade them out for 50 cents on a dollar. And I was just wondering if there's any way they could stop that, or if there's any way they could secure that so that couldn't happen.
Lance, thanks for the call. We don't have, as we talked about earlier, Jamie, the stamps anymore. Is there a system in place that guarantees that, you know, people use their Quest cards and, I don't know, can't sell them on the market?
Yeah, definitely. It is fraud, food share fraud, and we have processes in place that help one unearth these. But if individuals find if individuals have had that happen to them directly, where someone has stolen their card, there are ways for them to report that through and make sure that they get a new card. But certainly, we have a lot of measures in place. There are cases happening, and we certainly have our Office of Inspector General that investigates and deals with any fraud.
Lance, thanks.
But what I would say is that a majority of individuals are utilizing food share to the way that it is intended to be used for.
Thanks for the question, Lance. Ellen joins us now in La Crosse. Ellen, hello.
Hi, I'm calling in. I'm a benefit specialist in my area, and I help people understand how earned income might affect the benefits they receive, like Social Security, Medicaid, and food share. I definitely don't pretend to understand the whole food share calculation. I understand it's kind of complicated with credits being applied, certain utility allowances, but I just wanted to hear a little bit more about medical expenses and how folks can report those, and it can maybe help a food share payment be higher.
And Ellen, before we let you go, what is there a particular community you work with when you work with food share and Medicaid?
Yeah, people that are working through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, so individuals with disabilities that are going to work, I counsel them on their benefits.
Ellen, thanks a lot for the call. Jamie, when people are filling out forms, is there a consideration of, oh, you have a lot of medical bills? Well, that comes out of your income as we calculate what you get in food share benefit.
Yeah, and certainly thanks to the caller for doing that work, because it is there are a lot of rules and regulations, and we appreciate anyone who is willing to be on the front lines for that. Certainly there are exemptions for income that can be can help increase, to her point exactly, can help increase the allotment that you are able to receive. So there are very varying degrees by which that can be applied to the food share program.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ellen. On the amount of the allotment, we heard from Chris in Milwaukee, who wonders, what is the maximum amount, say, for a family of four?
I was just looking at that, Rob. Let me.
If,
For a family of four, the maximum allotment is $973.
All right. Let's go back to our calls now. Raleigh is with us in Oak Creek. Raleigh, hi.
Hi. I'm not sure if this was brought up already, but with Food Share, you can buy certain plants at a garden center that produce food, you know, i.e. tomatoes, peppers, pumpkin, even apple trees. But, you know, I'm thinking of the company Bonnie Plants, especially, that you find at many garden centers. But, of course, you'd want to check with the retailer, you know, before you try using the Food Share. So just thought I'd enter that into the conversation.
Right. Thanks for the call, Raleigh. Interesting. So, Jamie, if a particular sales place does it, Food Share can be used for food-producing plants?
So I think one of the things he's talking about is obviously healthy and fresh foods. So we obviously work with our local grocers and others, including many local farmers markets. And you can use your Quest card at any of those participating entities. I think another thing that is really great about trying to get fresh food with your Quest card is there are several entities right now that allow you to order online as well as get it delivered for those with mobility issues. And so that's another way to get fresher foods right but while utilizing your Food Share benefits.
Thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. Mia is with us in Sheboygan. Mia, hi.
Hi, I'm in Sheboygan. I'm actually at the health department dropping off paperwork that is required for the Food Share. It is child support paperwork. I just want to say that I don't want people to demonize people that are on food stamps. You know, I heard about some immigrants and people selling them off. Maybe people are lazy. I just want to say that, like, the majority of people really need this, and we are grateful. Also, I want to ask about the work requirement on October 1st. If a person has a child and they don't have a job, will they still receive the benefits? Because, you know, the child might go hungry. That's just my question.
Mia, thanks for the call. Jamie, do you have an answer for her?
So first off, I want to say thank you again for raising that issue. I think it is really important that we understand that any of us at any time could be in a situation, a food insecurity situation. And it is really important that we make sure that people understand this is a program through the federal government that is available for those who are eligible. I would have to look into that, but generally speaking, individuals are eligible in a household, and they collectively would become eligible. But children are also children also have access to that as long as somebody is able to fill out the forms and apply for them. So if there is a situation that seems like it is they need extra supports, I would say back to one of our previous callers who is working in our income maintenance organizations. They really do understand how to help families, and in that way, make sure that they are applying for the benefits they're eligible for.
We'll leave it there. Jamie, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Jamie Kuhn, Director of Medicaid at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, where she oversees the Food Share program. She talked to us about the latest on Wisconsin Food Share and what you need to know if you think you might benefit from assistance. Tomorrow on Central Time, electric cars and human rights abuses around the world, that and more tomorrow on Central Time.